Rajtovic. Tanya, April 2nd.
Yeah, again, it's always hard to figure out whether we should read it line for line or word for word, but I want to look at basically Perek Dalet and Hay. We're going to get more or less following the order. And we began looking, actually, we looked at some of Perek Dalet last week, in which he talks about the fact that there is in the Nefesh Elokis, in the godly soul of a person, there are what are called three garments of the soul, which are modes of expression. The soul, as it were, puts on these garments, and the garments are called Machshava, Dibur, Maaseh. They are called thought, speech, and deed. Are the garments of the soul. They are the modes of expression of the godly soul. And he says, therefore, that one can put them on through doing mitzvahs. When you do mitzvahs of the Torah, so there is maaseh, there is deed. Dibor is when you articulate the words of Torah. And then there is machshava, thought, when you're maaseh kol maaseh efshel lahasig, when you try to understand whatever you're able to understand, but pardes haTorah, right? Pardes, which means the orchard, is an abbreviation also, according to the Mekubalim, of the four levels of understanding Torah. We have pshat, which is the literal level. We have drush, which is more of an allegory. Remez is a bit more esoteric allegory. And then sod, the secret message of the Torah, which is Kabbalah. So when a person is osek in Maase, Dibor, and Machshava in Torah, then what happens is that the 613 mitzvos, as it were, envelop his body. He is like, in other words, he is surrounded. Again, what the Alter Rebbe is talking about here is Kabbalah talks about our relationship to Hashem in two ways. And this is based on a famous passage from the Zohar, which in some Siddurim actually appears as a prayer that you say before davening every day. Some Hasidim say it, some Sfardim say it. It's called Pasach Eliyahu. It's really a declaration of Eliyahu HaNavi. And one of the ways that Hashem is described is through the phrase, Sovev Kol Almin, Hashem surrounds all worlds, Umimalei Kol Almin, and He fills all worlds. Sovev, He surrounds, and He is Mimale, and He fills. And the terms that are derived from that concept is that the light of Hashem connects us to Hashem in two ways. There is what is called Or HaMakif, the light that surrounds me, which is Mechuvin, that corresponds to Sovev Kol Almin. And then there is the Or HaPnimi, there's the inner light from within me, which is Mamale Kol Almin. Now, someone who explained this, I think Norman Lamb actually has a whole essay on this, he wants to explain this in more of a psychological dimension, because we already find that our religious relationship to Hashem is manifest both in Hashem's transcendence and in Hashem's immanence. The notion of transcendence is the sense that the Ribono Shel Olam is beyond us, as the Rambam would say over and over again. We have no way of understanding Him. And the foundation of Emunah is to believe that God is beyond any possibility of human comprehension. That is the transcendent aspect of the Almighty. And yet, paradoxically, we also believe that we have a unique relationship with Hashem, in which He loves us, He is concerned with us, He is very close to us. And that is called the immanence of Hashem in Bria. And not using those fancy words, obviously, but the Avudraham, one of the great late Rishonim, who wrote on Tefillah, actually says that these two dimensions of what we would call transcendence and immanence are reflected in every bracha. That is why brachos switch commonly from the second person, nochach, to what is called the third person. For example, the bracha on water is Baruch Atah Hashem, blessed art you Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Olam, Shakol Niyah Bidvaro, everything has come into existence through His word. logically, grammatically, it should say shakol niya bidvarecha. And yet you switch the bracha from nochach, nochach is speaking to someone directly, to mister, third person who is concealed. So the Avodah says this represents the two dimensions in our service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in which on one hand, Hashem is very near to us. On the other hand, Hashem is very far from us. In other words, we can't make Hashem our buddy and he'll go out for a coffee or something like that. There has to be, and that in turn is also reflected of Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. The relationship of love of God is predicated on an awareness of our closeness to Hashem. The notion of reverence, pachat, is a reflection of the distance we have from God, in which we are so insignificant compared to Him.
The imminence that you mentioned, is this the same as Ashgacha Pratit or not?
Ashgacha Pratit could be a reflection of that imminence, yeah, that Hashem is involved in my life. Yeah, certainly Ashgacha Pratit is a reflection of Hashem's love for His
But there is more
creatures.
To the imminence than just Ashgacha Pratit.
Yeah, in other words, it involves the notion of interaction, the notion of communication. Now, again, to go into even the history, I mean, basically, the great appeal of Christianity in its early centuries, when it was basically Jews who were becoming Christian, was the notion that it took the notion of the imminence of God to an extreme in an unacceptable way by saying, God is so imminent, God is so involved with our lives that He became one of us. That's kind of imminence, you know, going to the nth degree. And that is where the transcendent idea has to balance and limit that notion of imminence.
Does he use the Tanya for imminence?
He doesn't use, well, those are things. Now, some want to say, as they say, Norman Lamb, I think, argues that the phrase in the passage of the Zohar, the Tanit Ve'eliyahu, that says, Hashem is Sovev Kol Almin, He surrounds the universe, umemale, and He fills the universe, is a reference to these two dimensions. Surrounding is the notion of God's transcendence. God is beyond the universe. The universe is contained, right? Mimale is Hashem's imminence in the universe. And that's the Or Panimi, the inner light, and the Or Hamakif, which is a very important expression, the surrounding light, in which Hashem is within us and Hashem is surrounding us. But again, it's not so clear that the Baal Tanya uses that in terms of immanence and transcendence. He seems to suggest both are reflections of Hashem's closeness to us. But they are of different levels. There is the closeness in which Hashem... Because again, surrounding, the concept of Hashem surrounding us is not a connotation intrinsically of distance. Right? A parent can embrace, in fact, you'll see the mashal that the Baal Tanya used. A parent can embrace a child. The parent is surrounding the child, but it's a gesture of protection and love. So it would seem that the Baal Tanya does not, at least at this point, does not use sovev, makif, and panimi as synonyms for this transcendence and immanence. Rather, he looks at them both as forms of closeness. But the very striking approach that he has over here is the following. He basically says that the Torah, and again, this could only be written by a Litvisha Chassid, it's quite amazing. It's just amazing. Well, I mean, you know, historically, when the Vilna Gaon put the Hasidic movement into excommunication in the early years, the Vilna Gaon himself, who was not even that involved in politics of the time. I mean, the Vilna Gaon normally didn't get involved in this, but the Vilna Gaon actually signed a document of excommunication against the early Hasidim. And the Shaliach who was chosen from the Hasidic movement to try to negotiate with the Vilna Gaon was none other than the Baal Tanya, for very, very good reasons. Some of the other folk wouldn't have had a chance. The Baal Tanya was the closest one, in Hashkafa even, to the Vilna Gaon, because we're going to see tonight the words by which he describes the primacy of Torah study. Again, part of and what the Vilna Gaon's critique was, you know, you could speculate on it endlessly. But there were a lot of different points. But one of the major points was that the Vilna Gaon, as well as others, were very afraid and in the emphasis on the ability of every person to connect to Hashem, which is an important lesson, of course, there was a fear that the importance of Torah study would be denigrated. It's not so important to learn Gemara, learn this and that. The main point is to have heart, to have emotion, to have feeling, etc. And the Vilna Gaon saw this as potentially, a very, very destructive thing, because it would undermine the importance of Talmud Torah, and would ultimately foster a disrespect for halacha as well. In other words, not only would it undermine Torah learning, but it would even endanger halacha itself, as people say today. Gee, why is it so important if I say Kriya Shema by 9:30, if I can get into a better mood if I sleep another 2 hours? And then the Vilna Gaon said, you know, you're throwing out halacha, potentially throwing out Talmud Torah. So because of this, he thought that the early Hasidic movement was a very, very dangerous thing. Now, the whole idea of Chabad is really moving against the notion of pure emotionalism. And we're going to see what the Baal HaTanya says about the importance of Torah learning in a very, very amazing way. So, and then if you look at the Nefesh HaChaim, which was written by Rav Chaim Voloshiner, which is primarily a sefer about the importance of Torah learning, you're going to find that they both basically are saying very much the same thing. So the Baal HaTanya by far was the best representative they could have chosen to negotiate with the Vilna Gaon about the Hasidic movement, because they were showing that, you know, Hasidim know how to learn too, etc. But the Vilna Gaon refused to see him. Although Hasidim have a tradition, who knows if it's true, that the Vilna Gaon gazed at him through a little hole in the door and said, who knows, but apparently he said, he's a great person, but I'm not going to validate the movement by talking to him. It's, the Baal HaTanya says it's fine, but, you know, I'm not going to give a heksher to everything else that is going on. Now, they do say this. They do say the third Lubavitcher Rebbe was the Tzemach Tzedek. Tzemach Tzedek was also a Menachem Mendel, the same name as the seventh Rebbe. In fact, the Tzemach Tzedek was his great-grandfather going back, because he's also a descendant. Although he was a son-in-law of the previous Rebbe, but he was, they married cousins, so he was a descendant of the Alter Rebbe as well. So the Tzemach Tzedek was a Rebbe for many, many years, and not as much as the seventh Rebbe, and he really built up Chabad into a very big movement, and he was a prolific posek and gadol and writer. And he actually, there were Litvisha Rabbanim who would get smicha from him, even though they're not Hasidic. So the Aruch HaShulchan, the famous Aruch HaShulchan, had his smicha from the Tzemach Tzedek. The Torah Tamima, his son, who wrote a big biography, Makor Baruch, some of it's been translated into English and recalled by Lakewood, whatever it is. But in the Makor Baruch, the Torah Tamima quotes his father as telling him from the Tzemach Tzedek that the Tzemach Tzedek said, Hasidim have to be very grateful for the Vilna Gaon putting them into Cheirim, because it was the Cheirim of the Vilna Gaon that prevented the excesses of Hasidus from going to anarchy and the like. It brought them back into the mainstream, and that's why, you know, many Hasidim were Gedolei Torah and Psak Halacha, and the Gra saw that kind of the pure emotionalism of certain Hasidus could have been very, very destructive. And therefore, the Tzemach Tzedek is said to say, we are grateful to the Gra for what he did. Now, it's so interesting how, you know, the same, if you read, for example, Martin Buber, who was not religious at all, Martin Buber saw the later development of Hasidus as a betrayal of its true essence. In other words, he also says that after the Cheirim of the Gra, Hasidus became more involved in Limud HaTorah and the like. The Tzemach Tzedek says, Baruch Hashem, that's a good thing. Martin Buber says, hey, they became, another group of Orthodox Jews, and they lost the spontaneity that energized the movement. So you'll actually see two different people are describing the same phenomenon. One views it as very positive, and one views it as very negative. Right? Buber always says that Hasidus degenerated after the first two generations, because it became a mainstream movement rather than one that's emphasized this unique way. So, but I want to show you what the Baal HaTanya writes. So he says, that when I do mitzvahs, my soul becomes malubish. This is the favorite word of the Baal Tanya. He uses it over and over again in many different contexts. My soul becomes enveloped. It becomes dressed in the Torah and the mitzvahs. It's a levush to my neshama. But he says, what is Torah? He says, Torah is a concretization of the essence of Hashem. Hashem's essence is incomprehensible. Hashem's essence is something we cannot touch. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu concretized his will into the directives of the Torah. And here's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says, just as a matter of basic philosophy, that normally in a human being, my knowledge and my essence are two different things, meaning I exist, and then I have knowledge in my head, and there is a separation between my knowledge and my essence. But in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because, again, and the Rambam says we don't even understand what this means, but because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a total unity, there aren't two things in God. God's knowledge and God's essence are absolutely one. Hu HaYodea, Hu HaMada. He's the knowledge, and he's the one who knows. Now, the Torah, which is an expression of God's will and God's knowledge, therefore, is a physical concretization of the essence of God, because it represents God's will and God's knowledge. And therefore, the Baal Tanya says, when you study, much of Gemara deals with, controversies. We're learning Ezekiel now. Reuven claims something against Shimon. If it's the will of Hashem that when Reuven sues Shimon, this will be the halacha, then you're studying the will of Hashem. But the will of Hashem is the same as the essence of Hashem, because in Hashem there is no duality. Therefore, he says, Limud HaTorah connects you to the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as it has become concretized in physical and mundane details. And even though the true essence of Hashem is not knowable at all, but Hashem is mitzamse, meaning to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu kavyachol contracted himself to be able to express his essence in the halachas of the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebaal Peh. So when you connect yourself to those words of the Torah, you are connecting yourself to the concretized essence of Hashem as reflected in these physical directives. Now that can be done by mitzvos, but you'll see why he says Torah is even greater. But the truth is, every time you're doing mitzvos, you're also connecting yourself to the Ratzon Hashem, because it is the will of Hashem that you do those mitzvos. And he says that this is the idea of how Torah, in fact, they even say, other Svarim say, although I don't think the Baal Tanya says it right, but I think he says it somewhere else, that the term mitzvah is a term that means companionship. A tzavas is a companion. So a mitzvah is something, besides its literal meaning as commandment, also means it is something that creates companionship between man and God, because you're linking yourself up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence. So let me just read you a little bit of how he expresses this. If you look in Perek Gimel, I'm sorry, not Perek Gimel, I'm sorry. Perek Dalet we're looking at, Perek Dalet, yeah. He says, the Nefesh Elokis, the godly soul, has three levushin, has three garments, which are Machshava, Dibur, Masa, thought, speech, and action, of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. When a person fulfills them with masa and with speech, he occupies himself in explaining the mitzvahs, and in thoughts, he thinks about the Torah. So what happens is the 613 limbs of his body are enveloped and dressed with the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. The Chabad, his Chachma, Bina, and Das, his intellectual faculties, are enveloped with the concepts of the Torah. His midos, his emotional characteristics, the fear and love and all of those faculties of the soul are enveloped with the mitzvah saseh and the mitzvah losa. They become like the garments of the soul. And here he makes the very basic point that we know there are 613 mitzvahs, 248 positive, 365 negative. And the primary emotional faculties of the soul are love and fear. Now, the love and fear could be directed to anything. But when you activate the love and the fear in connection with mitzvahs, it then becomes love of God and fear of God. And he says, the 248 positive commandments emanate from love. Because when you love someone, you want to do for them. And the 365 negative commandments emanate from fear and reverence. Because when you're afraid, you don't cross boundaries. In fact, this is already a very old idea. This is actually stated by the Ramban. Very, very interesting. The Ramban gives a comment in Parshas Yisrael on the halacha that when a positive commandment comes in conflict with a negative commandment, meaning I can only do a positive commandment if I violate a negative commandment. The most common example for our context would be a bris on Shabbos, right? Doing a bris, causing bleeding, is one of the 39 malachas of Shabbos. Actually, what malacha it is, it's machlokas, but actually it's considered to be shechita, slaughtering, taking, drawing blood. It's, even if you're not killing someone, that's considered to be the malacha of shochet. And yet, we do a bris on Shabbos if it's the eighth day. We have a pasuk for this, but the principle behind that pasuk is positive commandments override negative commandments. Asei docha lo sase. And the Ramban gives this explanation. Why an asei is docha lo sase? Because doing positive commandments are ways you affirm love. Avoiding negative transgression are expressions of fear. And since love is a greater madrega than fear, the Avedas Hashem of Ava overrides the Avedas Hashem of Yira. This is what the Ramban says. The Baal HaTanya says exactly the same point. He says that I have 613 limbs, or 248 bones and 365 sinews, but the different constituent parts of my body add up to 613. But the 248 are connected to love, and the 365 are connected to fear. But what happens at this point, and then of course he mentions almost as a side note that fear has two components, as is well known. There is the fear that as a servant of the king, I dare not violate his will. That is called yiras ha'onesh. I'm afraid I'm going to get punished. And then he says there's a deeper yira, of course, which is not a question of punishment, but it's a question of awe and reverence as I realize my insignificance compared to the awesome power and grandeur and glory of Hashem. Again, he'll talk about two yiras later. He talks about it in the Geras on Shuva in Arichas. But he just mentions as an aside. So he says, what you're doing is, all of your soul becomes transformed because you've enveloped it. The physical part of your body, the mental part of your body, the emotional part of your soul have become enveloped in the levush of Hashem's commandments. But Hashem's commandments, which are His will, are also His essence. So it's not just the mitzvos that have become your garments, but this is the or hamakif, this is the surrounding light of Hashem Himself. Okay? Because the mitzvos are a concretization of the divine will. The emes is, again, this is an idea that the Ramban actually says in another context. The Ramban says in the Hakdama to the Torah, his introduction to the Torah, the Ramban says the entire Torah from the Beis of Bereishis to the Lamed of the last word in the Torah, Le'enei Kol Yisrael, over 300,000 letters, is all one long name of Hashem. I can't pronounce it, obviously. But he says, a name is the concretization of essence. The whole Torah is encoded Hashem's essence through a lot of contractions and concealments. So the idea of not eating meat and milk, you know, whatever it is, expresses some fundamental construct of God's essence that, you know, we don't really access it in that way, but by understanding that tail end of it, we are connecting to God's essence. That's why the Ramban says la halacha, although we don't paskin like this Ramban, the Ramban says la halacha, if a Sefer Torah misses a letter, even if the letter does not change the meaning of the word. Let's say, for example, some names are something like Aharon. Aharon is normally spelled without a vav, but occasionally it's spelled male with a vav. So the Ramban writes, if you're missing a vav in Aharon, even though it's going to be pronounced the same way, it does not change any meaning, the Sefer Torah is puzzle. Why would the Sefer Torah be puzzle if the word means the same word? The Ramban says, because if the Torah is a concretization of the totality of the divine essence, then it is specifically these letters that are the Shem Hashem. It's like you're missing a letter in Hashem's name. It no longer expresses. In other words, on a literal level, you still get the same story, but on the spiritual level, it no longer expresses the divine essence. Alamaisa, this is a very powerful thought that the Ramban says about the holiness of a Sefer Torah. The truth of the matter is that the Ramah does not paskin like that. The Ramah actually says although the reason he gives actually may not negate the Ramban's argument. The Ramah quotes a Gemara in Kedushin that says that Bizman Hazeh, we have lost the tradition of which letters, which words are to be filled and which words are to be chaser. Although we do what we do, but we're not 100% sure that we're right. We're not bekiyim in chaseris v'yaseris. So the Ramah says, based on that, it makes no sense to pasal a Torah when you're missing a vav in Aharon, because maybe it's not supposed to have a vav. No. The Minchas Chinuch says, as a Devar Pashut, that obviously we've never lost the tradition regarding things that would change the meaning of the words. So when something changes the meaning of a word, of course, we know the Torah is puzzle. But legabe chaseres v'yaseres, which don't change the meaning, the Ramah says we're not mitzi, the Torah is not puzzle. And we continue reading in it. But as I say, that doesn't negate the Ramban's point. I mean, the Ramah's point is because we don't know, but theoretically, if we knew, the Torah would in fact be puzzle under those circumstances. Of course, the question becomes, if the exact letter count is so significant, then why did we lose that tradition? I mean, you could say the very fact that we weren't conscientiously keeping it might indicate it doesn't have that exact importance that the Ramban accords to it. By the way, this is also a big question. Now, they have an answer for this. I never understood their answer. For the Eshet Torah discovery stuff, the Bible codes. You know, the Bible codes are predicated on finding patterns based on equidistant letter sequences. So they do all this computer stuff where they show you in the Parsha of Amalek, I'm making up a particular, I mean, they'll find allusions to Hitler. In the Parsha of Amalek, like every X number of letters, let's say every seventh letter, you'll have a hey, and then a yud, and then a tes, and then a lamed, and then a resh. So you see Hitler encoded in Amalek. Or they come up with something about the World Trade Center is there in terms of the tochacha and the like. And this is based on the notion of equidistant spacing of letters in which you build in codes. And what they do is they try to scientifically prove this by saying that you can't say it's randomized, because if you take the New York Times or you take War and Peace, statistically you will get a certain amount of random word significant things, but it'll be a very small percentage. And this is a very higher percentage and the like. But one of the and therefore this proves the Torah is from God, because you know God tells you the future. Of course, it's always after the fact, right? I mean, nobody figured out Hitler's name before there was a Hitler. But, you know, that's kind of impossible. But you know, it's always after the fact you look for something. But one of the logical problems with this is that in order to say that there's some divine meaning in equidistant spacing, that presupposes that we know exactly how many letters there are supposed to be in the Torah. But if, in fact, we're not bekiyim in chaseros v'yaseros, so when you come up with something every seventh letter, maybe it wouldn't be every seventh. Maybe this is after eight letters, and this is after nine letters, and this is after six letters. Now, it's true, we do have a sum total of how many letters in the Torah. Chazal gave us that. But that doesn't negate the idea that we still don't know individual chaseros and yaseros, because you know, whatever error you have here is compensated by an extra letter there. So even if you don't throw off the whole total, let's assume we know the whole total, because I'll give us numbers for that. But if we don't know individual chaseros v'yaseros, there is a logical problem. How can you assume patterns based on equidistant spacing? That's a very good question. They have some fancy answers. At some point, they go off into mathematical science, which, you know, it's hard to follow. Sometimes they say things that maybe, you know, who knows what they're saying? Maybe it's just a way of getting rid of the question. But they have attempted to address this, I do know. But I the answer seems to be a technical computer science type of problem. Yeah. Yeah. So you're saying that maybe it should serve as a corrective, to the Rama.
Maybe at least in that part it establishes that.
Could be. It turns out that would be a an interesting halacha lemaisa, that if you're missing a letter in when those patterns have been identified, you have to be motzi. Another Sefer Torah, not like the Rama. That'd be an interesting issue. In fact, that raises a whole other peripheral issue about to what extent do scientific changes mandate changes in halacha. Very controversial area. You know, there's a very famous example that already the early Achronim talk about. This is the famous din of killing a lice on Shabbos, or a louse on Shabbos. Kina. So the Gemara says, Maseches Shabbos, that even though you're not allowed to kill anything on Shabbos, kill an insect, but you're allowed to kill lice on Shabbos, because the issur of killing is only for animals that reproduce sexually through Zachar and Nekeva, even if they're small. But lice, Chazal say, are produced through spontaneous generation, through the decaying of matter, which was widely believed, of course, indeed. And therefore, things that are generated by spontaneous generation, there is no issur of Netilas Neshama. Now, what happened was, when the microscope got invented and other things, it was discovered that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation, and even lice, you know, have their shiduchim, whatever it is. They have zachar and nekeva. And so, now this is unusual. It's one thing to say, you know, when Chazal are machmir and we think the science is different, all right, so we got to be machmir no matter what. But here you have an interesting example. Chazal permitted something. They permitted something on Shabbos, which in light of what our apparent knowledge should be forbidden min HaTorah. So what do you say over there? Do you say, I'm allowed to kill a lice on Shabbos because Chazal matred it, even though that was based on a science that it seemed, I never want to say it is incorrect, but it seems to us to be incorrect. So that is already a machlokas, although, you know, modern books talk about it, but that is a machlokas that goes back to the very, you know, invention of the microscope. What is it, in the 16th century, in which there's a sefer from a great Italian gadol, the Pachad Yitzchak, not to be confused with Rav Huttner's Pachad Yitzchak, but the Pachad Yitzchak was an early encyclopedia of halacha, in which he brings a number of shitas that actually say that harigas kina would be forbidden, based on the scientific knowledge. Chazal based it on their knowledge. We have to base it on our knowledge, and therefore it would be forbidden. But Rav Dessler, the Michta Melio, has a long, long essay, which is kind of almost a mystical view of halacha. And that is, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks through Chazal, so even if Chazal articulate a halacha in light of reasons that made sense to them, there is a transcendent finality in their decision making, which means there could be, again, we don't know the reason. There could be 100 reasons why killing a kina is mutter. Chazal identified the reason that was sensible from their perspective, but that does not exhaust the spiritual transcendental validity of their determinations. Again, it's a little. You know, it is a mystical theory of halacha, because again, it's a little difficult, because the halachic give and take in the Gemara itself is always predicated on logical argumentation. So, you know, it's hard to know where to draw the line on this. But this is what Rav Dessler says. Dessler says, a halacha does not change, even if it's giving you a leniency on the basis of subsequent knowledge that comes later. Now, the simple answer that one could give is simply this, that all of the halachas of the Torah are based on appearances, right? We talk about the sun revolving around the earth because that's what it looks like to us. Microscopic insects are permitted to eat because the Torah, even if you could identify them, even if you would see them in a microscope, because that which is not visible to the naked eye is not considered usher. So you could say the same thing, really, without getting into a mystical idea, you could say the same thing, that when the Torah defines something as sexually reproducing or not sexually reproducing, that is a legally defined term based on the perception of the unaided eye. So if I cannot see sexual reproduction, then halachically it is classified as asexual reproduction. In other words, that's a matter of definition. The halacha has its own internal definitions, and therefore, even if we have various ways of looking beneath what is visible to the human eye, the halacha does not require us to do it. I mean, that would be the simplest reason. But that's what they say, gives a more mystical reason in which Chazal are right even when they're wrong, in the sense that they only revealed... Actually, it's reminiscent of a story. Now, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik once had a shaila about Rav Chaim hated to paskin, although he was considered to be the Gadol Hador in analytical ability. He absolutely hated to paskin. Even in Brisk, where he was the Rav, he would never paskin. He had a great dayan, Rav Simcha Zelig Grigor, who paskins every shaila in Brisk. Rav Chaim never paskin. So one time he had a shaila that he needed to ask, and he asked the shaila to the person who was considered to be the Gadol Hador in Psak Halacha. This was Rav Yitzchak Ochanan Spector. Rav Yitzchak Ochanan Spector was the Rav of Kufna. He was considered to be not only the Posek Hador, but he was considered to be really the leader of the Jewish world. I mean, he was involved in those days in Russia. Things were very bad for Jews. They had the drafts and all the compulsory service for 30 years, etc., the cantonists. And he was the one that was trying to keep things together during a very, very difficult time. So the story goes, it might be a story, but this is what Briskers say, that Rav Chaim sent him a shaila and said, please give me the psak, but don't give me any reasons. Just tell me yes or no. Do not give me a reason. And the explanation that's given is that whatever lumdus Rav Yitzchak Ochanan would come up with, Rav Chaim would probably not totally accept it. The Rav Chaim would have a deeper understanding, a more subtle understanding, etc. But Rav Chaim did feel, in a mystical sense, that if this was the man that HaKadosh Baruch Hu entrusted to be the leader of Klal Yisrael, then even if he can't explain his reasoning in a totally transparent way, but the intuition itself would have the imprimatur of the divine. So Rav Chaim says, whatever you tell me is right. Now, you may not have the right reason. You may not even know why it's right. But I trust you that it's right. Don't give me the reason. Again, it's kind of what Rav Dessler says, that even when Chazal gave a wrong reason, it's still right in that sense. So I'm just saying that issue of whether the Ramah's Psak would be changed because of that would be connected to that issue. Okay, but you see what a beautiful thing this is, in the sense that I become enveloped in the garments of the Torah and the mitzvahs. And although garments are normally inferior to the person wearing them, but here, the garments are infinitely higher than the person wearing them, because the garments in which I become enveloped are none other than the concretization of the essence of Hashem in Torah and mitzvahs. So you're enveloped by God, the Or Hashem, that has become concretized in the mitzvahs that you do, in the Torah that you speak, and in the Torah thoughts that you envelop your mind. But here, the Baal HaTanya says something that is really very, very striking. He says, mitzvos are indeed called levush. Your soul is enveloped in the mitzvos. But Torah, Limud HaTorah, is not only the light that surrounds you. It is also the light that fills you from within. And that's why he quotes the Zohar that says Mitzvos are compared to garments. Torah learning is compared to water and food that actually enter your body. And it becomes part of your body because they make the, right, they make your flesh, they make your muscle, they make your flesh, etc. And therefore, the union to with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is much more complete in Torah learning. In fact, he even uses the expression, he says the following. He says, we have this expression in English. When an idea comes into your head and you master it, we talk about wrapping your mind around it. Right? You wrap, so he says, there's kind of a double enveloping. I envelop myself with Torah, but then I envelop my mind around the Torah. So therefore, it is both an or makif, a surrounding light, and it's an or panimi. And he says that this in particular refers to a person's attempt to understand the Torah, meaning to say, he makes the point. By the way, one of the very great svarim that the Bala Tanya wrote, it's really considered to be the classic work on this subject, is he wrote a kuntris on Hilchos Talmud Torah. That is the classic work. I mean, I will tell you, my Rosh Hashiva, Rav Yaakov Weinberg Zatzal, who, for whatever reason, absolutely did not like Chabad. He actually was a very, very anti-Chabad person for various personal reasons. But he would learn and teach from the Hilchos Talmud Torah of Shneur Zalman. It's really a very, very classic. It's considered to be the most definitive work on Hilchos Talmud Torah ever written. And here, he's meramis to the fact that in Talmud Torah, there are actually two different commandments. I mean, well, there are more than that. There's a mitzvah to learn Torah. There's a mitzvah to teach Torah. But there's a mitzvah to know Torah. We sometimes forget about that. There's a mitzvah to learn Torah. In other words, every time I learn, even if I forget, whatever it is, I'm doing a great, great mitzvah, to be sure. But there's a separate mitzvah that a person must endeavor to know as much Torah as they're able to know. And he says, interestingly enough, again, you almost don't think it's a chassid talking over here. He says that it is the knowing of the Torah that generates the light from within, in which your mind becomes connected to Hashem. Because if you're just learning Torah without working to know and understand it, it becomes a levush. Talmud Torah, like any other mitzvah, is a garment of the soul. But the or panimi comes from the knowledge of the Torah. Now, this might explain another aspect, which goes back a little bit to the mystical idea. I think they say in the name of Rav Yisrael Salanter, that, you know, sometimes when a Rishon, the Rush, the Ramban, the Rif, somebody, will say a halacha, they will try to bolster it with a proof. They say, this is the din because this is my proof. Other times, they will say, mistavra, it appears to me, it is logical to me. They don't have a proof, they just say, it appears to me. So it is said, b'shem Rav Yisrael Salanter, that any halacha that a Rishon derives from his own logic is actually stronger than a halacha that is derived from a proof. And the reason is, when a halacha is derived from a proof, it's only as good as the proof. And proofs can be refuted. In fact, the Ramban writes a very interesting thing. The Ramban says, you know, texts can mean many, many different things. So one person reads a text to mean this. One person reads a text to mean this. The Ramban writes, it is very rarely that there's an unequivocal certainty as to what a passage means, and therefore you can conclusively bring a proof. It's not that often. But, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, when a Rishon says that this is logical to me, it is the totality of the Torah in his personality that is leading him to that conclusion. And that is stronger than any individual constituent part. Now, mystically, based on this explanation, you could see that. Because if one's knowledge of the Torah is that inner light of Hashem, which in turn is the concretization of God's Metzius, then inside as well as outside, the person is Mekushar, he's tied to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that will give him access to truth in numerous ways. In other words, his whole soul will be speaking the truth beyond the individual proofs that one could bring from this source and that source. That is the source of what is the controversial idea in some circles of Das Torah. Sometimes you find, again, some people decry it, but sometimes you find, again, I mean, it has its negatives, but you find what you might call ex cathedra declarations. meaning sometimes Gedolim will say things, and they will not explain it. They will not say, this is based on the Shulchan Aruch, or this is based on the Rambam, or this is based on the Gemara. They just say, can't do it. It's Keneged Das Torah. And people are critical of that. You know, well, why can't you? Give us a proof. Tell us why. And you know, the Chazon Ish used to say, you know, this comes from a person, you know, from learning Torah for many, many years. There are certain intuitions that one has. Now again, there are people who are skeptical of this. But there's no question, the way the Baal HaTanya is explaining it, there's going to be some real power and strength to that. Because as a person knows the Torah, there is the inner light of Hashem that is within him, not just the surrounding light. And that's why he says Talmud Torah is the greatest, which means Yediyas HaTorah, is the greatest of all mitzvahs. Because that generates that inner light. That generates lechem, the bread from within, and not just the garments from without. So that's really a very, very remarkable statement about the notion of the importance of what is called Yediyas HaTorah. Now, that's something we have to think about. You know, I was going to say that we sometimes overemphasize Limud HaTorah over knowing Torah, but on the other hand, the truth is we don't emphasize learning Torah either. It's like somebody once said, you know, the Prisper, somebody said, when the Chazon Ish was Nifter. So somebody wanted to give a hesped and said, the Chazon Ish was Zoche to what he became because he learned Torah with love and with devotion and with Mesiris Nefesh and with Devekas. Briskarov said, well, all of that is true, but the Chazon Ish became the Chazon Ish because he learned. Meaning to say, you see, when you make it that way, you're implying, well, you know, I learned and he learned. The difference is he had Kavanas. The difference is you got to put in a certain amount of time in the enterprise as well, and then you superimpose all the other things. So the truth of the matter is, we all of us could do, you know, more and more and more and more to try to learn more. But even among people who learn a lot, there often is not a systematic program to try to know what you learn, to remember what you learn, to review what you learn. A person could learn many years sometimes and not necessarily have a great knowledge base because, you know, chazer, in fact, it goes back to, people don't review enough. Whatever it is, sometimes people spend too much time learning esoteric commentary and not basic pshat that can give them fundamental knowledge. But you see, the Baal HaTanya says Beferish here. And he is considered to be, as they say, even among the non-Hasidim, kind of the great authority on the parameters of Talmud Torah. This was his field, so to speak. And he says that it is Yediyas HaTorah that generates that ore from within. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah, which is a great, great mitzvah, is still called a levush. It is the external garments. It is not the or. It is not the or panimi. So, again, one would not, you know, if you were to give this to somebody and ask him, who's the author, they might not have said it was a Hasidish Rebbe who was the author of this. But this is what he says about the greatness of Talmud Torah. He's a little ambiguous. He does say, yeah. In fact, I'm sorry, that particular thing he does address. Let me just find you the exact wording here. I believe he says, Beferish, it goes on Yediyas HaTorah. Let me just find the language here. This is, should be in Parakeh somewhere. Actually, just read this inside. He says like this. He says, this is in Perek Hay. V'zos mala yisera gadela v'nifla li'ein kates. This mala, this superiority, is great and wonderful without end. Asher b'mitzvahs yediyas haTorah, the mitzvah of knowing the Torah. V'hasagasa, and comprehending it. I'll call mitzvahs masiyas greater than any other mitzvah that you do. V'afilu al mitzvahs hatluyas b'dibor, even mitzvahs that involve speech. V'afilu al mitzvahs talmud Torah shebedibor, that you fulfill by speech. Ki al yidei kol ha mitzvah shebedibor u'maseh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu malbish es hanefesh. God envelops my soul. Umakifa or Hashem, and the light of God surrounds me, indeed, which is a great thing. Me rosha ad ragla, from the head of my soul, the soul is feminine, to its foot. Ubi yediyah satayra, however, milvad shahasechel mulubash b'chachmas Hashem. It is not only that the seichel is enveloped in the wisdom of God. Hine gam chachmas Hashem bekirbo. The wisdom of Hashem is within him, and his seichel surrounds it. Masha seichel masig v'tofes umakif besichlo. Right, he has his mind around it. Masha efshel olitzel, whatever he's able to understand. Olas midias haTorah ishkefi sichlo. Each person according to their seichel. V'koach yidiaso v'hasagaso v'pardes. Ulefi shebi yediyas haTorah, haTorah melubeshes, the Torah is enveloped in the nefesh ha'adam, v'sichlei, and in his intellect, umukefes b'socham, right, the Torah is surrounded within them, lochein nikres b'shem lechem umazon hanefesh. The Torah is called the food and bread, ki kamo shahalechem hagashmi, physical bread, zones haguf, it sustains the body. Kisha machniso b'teichai v'kir by mamish, when you bring it into your body. V'nepach sham, lios damu basar, and it becomes part of you. It becomes your flesh, it becomes your blood. V'yaz yichya v'yiskayim, and then you live. Kach, b'yidiyah satara v'asagasa b'nefesh ha'adam. Shalom dehetev b'iyun sichla. Right, one thinks about it. Adshe nitfeses besichlo. It is, right, his mind wraps around it. Umisachedes imo. It becomes one with him. V'hayu liachadim. They become one thing. Nase mazain lenefesh. V'chayim bekirba. It is his food. It is his life. Mechayei hachayim. From the source of all life. The concretization of Hashem. Ein sof. Baruch Hu, Hamulubash, who in turn, Hashem enveloped himself in the wisdom of his Torah. V'zeh shekasav v'sayrascha b'teich me'oi. This is an expression. David HaMelech says, your Torah is in my guts. That's what it means. It becomes the mazon. V'chumash shekasav b'yetz chayim, and now he brings from Rav Chaim Vital, the Yetz Chayim, which is the Ari's teachings. Shelevushe ha'nishamas b'gan Eden. The garments of the soul in Gan Eden are mitzvos. V'haTorah is mazon l'neshamos, is the food of the soul. She'asko b'yomazeh b'Torah l'shma, for those who learn Torah l'shma. And what is l'shma? Actually, this is a dehainu. K'dei l'kasher nafshe l'shma. Actually, this is another interesting machlokas. The meaning of the phrase, right? Chazal are mishabeach. Learning Torah, of course, but learning Torah lishma, for its sake. What is the meaning of learning Torah lishma? Now the Baal HaTanya says beferish here, as an aside. What is the meaning of learning Torah lishma? He says beferish, kedei lekasher nafsho lashem al yedei hasagas haTorah. One who learns Torah for the express purpose of uniting his soul to God through the process of understanding the Torah, which is the will of God. Which means, the Baal Tanya is saying, that the maila of Lishma requires a consciousness that I am learning for Deveikus Bashem. Now, Rav Chaim V'Lezhiner, in the Nefesh HaChaim, and again, people are still divided. Did he know, did he read the Tanya, etc.? You know, this is an interesting question. Tanya was already out. And Rav Chaim V'Lezhiner wrote Nefesh HaChaim as kind of a rejoinder to Hasidus, in a much more gentle way. He did not use Chayrim at all. In fact, he had very good relations with Hasidus. but he tries to, in fact, he calls Hasidim the Nefesh HaChayim, Mavakshe Hashem, those who seek God. But he's, you know, gently critical of them in many ways, in a much more gentle way. And one of the gentle criticisms he has of them is that they misinterpret the notion of Torah Lishma, because they say that Torah Lishma requires Devekus. Now he says, once again, now it's clear that what Rav Chaim is describing would not be if someone who follows the Tanya faithfully. But he says, as a result of Devekus, you know, they will stop learning and they will say Tehillim, etc., and they will not focus on the actual content of something. They'll immediately go to a mystical meaning. So if it talks about the ox gores the donkey, they will not be interested in the technicalities of the sugya. And he's very critical. So Rav Chaim V'Lashner actually says, the meaning of Torah Lishma is you learn Torah for the purpose of knowing Torah. Not for kavod, not for wealth. You do it in order, and therefore he says, the only kavana you have to have when you learn Torah is I want to know and I want to understand. And Rav Chaim V'Lashner says, conscious thoughts of Devekus Hashem, although Devekus comes, are actually distracting, dangerous, and they will take you away from the primary path. Now, the truth of the matter is, it could very well be, I mean, the Tanya would agree with that. He says the goal is this Devekus Hashem, but on the other hand, he emphasizes that Devekus comes only with a Yediyas HaTorah. Now, Rav Chaim V'Lashner has a very interesting mashal, though. He says like this. He says, Devekus does have a role, but he gives it a very limited time frame. And he draws a fascinating analogy from the Gemara and Mishnah in Bava Metzia. The Mishnah in Bava Metzia says that if I sell you grain, along with the grain, I'm allowed to include a certain percentage of dirt, because apparently that soil has the property, the soil in which the grain grew has the property of preventing spoilage. So per every measure of grain, a certain percentage is allowed to be dirt and rocks, because that's considered to be a preservative. So the ratios that are given are essentially one in 24, meaning for every 23 parts of grain, you can have one part of preservative. That's how the shiurim work out. So Rav Chaim says the following. Rav Chaim says that the grain, the lechem, is limud haTorah. But if one does not consciously think about Yiras Shamayim and closeness to Hashem, then Chas V'Shalom will become a Baal Gaiva or whatever it is. So you need to preserve your grain with a certain explicit concentration on Hashem. But the ratio should be 1 out of 24. Because that's the ratio for preserving grain. So what is the cheshbon they say? So you can figure this out. I think they actually, that's the basis of the yeshiva thing. That's right. In the Litvish yeshivas, the tradition was, although it's greatly dishonored, that Musar Seder was a half an hour a day. So I think they say that the basis of the half an hour Musar Seder is that a yeshiva learning should be 12 hours a day. And based on the ratio of 1 out of 24, you have a half an hour out of 12 devoted to Musar. It's based on Rav Chaim V'Lashner. But he does take issue, and one is very tempted, just looking at this line, one is very tempted to perhaps speculate that Rav Chaim V'Lashner was directly addressing the Tanya, because he says, there are those who say Lishma is Devekus, and he says, ain't okay. On the other hand, if you consider the Tanya as a whole, or this passage as a whole, it's very clear he was very, very much in agreement with Rav Chaim V'Lashner on the basic importance of Yediyas HaTorah. Let's just finish the reference here. And then the Baal HaTanya uses the Kabbalistic terminology. He says, HaMazayin, Mazayin, which is Torah, is Bechinas or Panimi. This is what the Zohar calls the inner light. Levushim, garments, Bechinas Makifin, is what the Zohar calls the surrounding light. Right, this is based on the passage Sovev Kol Almin Umamale Kol Almin Lefisha Mitzvos Hein Levushim Levad HaTorah Hi Mazon V'Gam Levush LeNefesh HaMaskeles Shemislabesh Ba B'Yuno V'Limuda V'Kol Shegen G'Shemotzi B'Piv B'Dibor Shehevel HaDibor Nasa B'Chinas Or Makif. In other words, when you speak words of Torah, you get enveloped with those words on the outside. That's an Or Makif. but the mind is the or panimi. But your question, I thought I saw them. Maybe it's, I'm going to have to find it. I believe he says the phrase Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam is specifically referring to Yedias HaTorah as well. Let me see if I can find that. I don't see it in Parakeh. Maybe I saw it in it. Where are you looking, Mrs. Perek Dalit?
Yeah.
Oh, Perek Hamishi. Where is it?
I think he is talking about Lima. Yedias HaTorah here, not Lima HaTorah.
Right, so that's good. That's right. He's from Yedias HaTorah. Well, I can't find it. Let me just work with that.
Near the end of,
near the end of Perek Hamishi?
Right.
Talmud Torah, right. So exactly, right. That's exactly right. So he's saying specifically, Yedias HaTorah. That's what he's saying, because the greatness of Talmud Torah is it's an or panimi and not just an or makif, and that's referring to Yedias HaTorah. That's what he's saying. Yeah, that's right. So that's where he says it.
The problem
yeah. Well, I think it actually would because in a sense, Talmud Torah is the indispensable hechsher for Yedias HaTorah. So obviously, if a person is in the process of learning Torah, as really all of us are, we don't know the whole Torah. So any time taken off from Talmud Torah would normally be an impairment of one's capacity of Yedias HaTorah as well. But again, it's a pretty amazing statement about how chashuv the idea of Talmud Torah was regarded by
this. What's your conclusion? Is it the idea of the Talmud, which is the...
The idea of the Torah, yeah.
What would be an example of Talmud Torah that lacks ideas of Torah?
Well...
Non-systematic or non-analytic?
Yeah, well, a lot of things. Number one, a person learns but does not endeavor to really understand things well. A person learns but does not systematically try to review. A person does not focus on gaining knowledge of things. You know, there are a lot of different ways of learning that are not productive in that way.
So it would be a difference in the reality if someone forgets position.
Yes, the Baal HaTanya in Hilchos Talmud, you know, Pirkei Avos says, literally, it says, if you shocheach davar echad mimishnasa, if you forget one thing, you're chayav misa. That's what it says. So, that is explained, even by Chazal, to mean if a person deliberately does not care if he remembers or not. He just doesn't care. If a person forgets because we forget,
that's... It was astounding to me, but basically, if you forgot something, then you don't know it.
Yeah.
And I mean, he said there were great, great people who knew one masechta.
Yeah.
That's all they knew, but they knew it. So that's what they knew.
Yeah, that gets to another question, meaning is the mitzvah to know something in the Torah? Is the mitzvah to know everything in the Torah? And the truth is...
I think he says if you have to even look it up, you don't know it.
Well, that's true. But the question is it better to know many things partially? I mean, given the reality that we're not going to know everything, is knowledge to be measured primarily quantitatively or qualitatively? Now, there is what they say, you know, this is one of the arguments they make with Daf Yomi. You know, the big criticism of Daf Yomi is, well, you're going fast, it's superficial, and you don't really know it very well, especially if you don't review, but, you know, it's superficial. Better to take something and, you know, try to understand it well, even if you're doing less. But the counter-argument is that Nadav Yehuda writes, not about Daf Yomi, he's well before it, but he writes the idea that he gives a mashal, or his sons give a mashal, they heard from their father, about a family that was stranded on a desert island, and they had a young child who didn't know how to read yet. And there were no books, but they would draw letters in the sand, and they would teach the child an aleph and a beis, and the kid didn't know what the sense was. Why do I have to know that this is called aleph, this is called beis? But eventually they got rescued, and the child discovered, oh, he could pick up a book and read a book because of this aleph. So the Nadav Yehuda says that all of our learning in this world is like being exposed to an olive base. And he says, you only understand in the world to come that which you superficially encountered in this world. And that which you did not superficially encounter in this world will be totally inaccessible in the world to come. So the defense is that if a person is exposed, even on a superficial level, to Kachim, to Tyros, to Zerayim, to things that maybe they don't understand so well, at least that will give them the entree to have a deeper understanding. That which you did not see in this world, you're not going to see in the world to come. So that would be the defense for superficial learning. But having said that, even if people are learning things on a superficial level, you can at least try to know that. I mean, part of our problem is we fail in both ways. The understanding is superficial, and the memory is not there either. I mean, you try to have at least one of the two, and then you do have a concept of yedias haTorah in some way. Okay. Anyway, I guess next time's after Pesach. Wish everybody a Chag Kosher v'Sameach. Good Yom Tov.
Did you have in mind Louis Finkelstein when you?
Yeah, Louis Finkelstein. Yeah, apparently it's out of print.
But they don't have Louis.
I realize. It's out of print, I think.
So we cannot.
I'm surprised. Amazon usually has. In fact, it's funny. I don't know why they don't listen. Even when things are out of print and they don't have it, they'll list it and say not available.
I checked. I said Louis Finkelstein about that. I figure maybe
it's famous. It's a famous book for Amazon not to have it, not to even list it. It's very, very surprising.
That's out of print.
Yeah, but even if it's out of print, they often say, out of print, we'll notify you when we get it or something. But just not to have it at all. It's the first time I ever encountered